Welcome back to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Friday, and we are covering the top stories from yesterday, August 13th, 2026. This is episode 487, and we have a massively AI and hardware-heavy lineup for you today.
We really do. We are going to be talking about OpenAI and Cerebras teaming up for some mind-bending inference speeds with GPT 5.6 Sol, Google dropping Gemini 3.7 Flash, a new open-source agent harness from DeepSeek, the long-awaited Linux desktop app for Codex, and finally, a completely wild hardware hack from Christopher Domas called Spaghettifying the DRAM.
Let us jump right in with a massive announcement from Cerebras and OpenAI. They just unveiled ultra-fast mode for GPT 5.6 Sol. And Sarah, the numbers here are just staggering. We are talking 750 output tokens per second.
It is honestly hard to even conceptualize that speed until you see it in action. The blog post mentions that they ran GPT 5.6 Sol on ultra-fast against humanity's last exam. For those who do not know, that is a brutal benchmark of 2,500 questions that are typically only answerable by people holding PhDs in fields like chemistry, economics, and literature. Sol finished the entire exam in 11 hours and 11 minutes. For comparison, Claude Fable 5 took over 78 hours to do the same thing.
Right, it is doing 3 days of continuous compute in a single working day. And the secret sauce here is the Cerebras wafer scale engine. Instead of moving data back and forth between memory and the processor like a traditional GPU, Cerebras packs 44 gigabytes of SRAM directly onto a wafer-sized chip. The weights stay on chip. It completely eliminates that memory bandwidth bottleneck that plagues large language model inference.
The Hacker News comments on this one were super insightful, especially regarding the economics of these models. A user named Aetherspawn pointed out that while Sol and Fable might have similar pricing on paper, Sol is incredibly token efficient. They mentioned that in their testing, Sol uses 10 to 100 times fewer output tokens compared to Fable for the exact same tasks. Because they run frontier models nearly 24/7, switching to Sol saves them around $500 a day.
Yeah, another commenter chimed in saying their company saved over $20 million in just a month by switching some workloads to OpenAI's Luna model. It really highlights how the competitive landscape is shifting. It's not just about raw intelligence anymore. It's about token efficiency, inference speed, and how fast you can put an agent on a critical path. If your agent can debug a production outage in 5 seconds instead of 2 minutes, that's a game changer for enterprise service level agreements.
Speaking of the AI model wars, Google just announced Gemini 3.7 Flash. They are calling it their most intelligent workhorse model yet for coding and agents. And this comes just 3 weeks after 3.6 Flash, which really shows the crazy release cadence we are at now.
Totally. They are offering it at half the price of the original 3.6 Flash cost per million tokens. But the Hacker News discussion took a really interesting turn. While people acknowledge the model is good, especially for image to HTML tasks where a user named JJCM noted it competes closely with Grok 4.6, the biggest talking point was actually about the Google developer experience.
Yes, the friction of just getting an API key. That same user kicked off a massive thread about how hard it is to actually build on Google's cloud infrastructure as a startup. They said Google assumes they are serving companies at Google scale first and at a human scale second.
That comment really resonated with the community. People were sharing horror stories of trying to set up simple environments. One user named Clayton Gullick talked about trying to set up standard dev, QA, and prod servers for a startup, only to get denied for quota with an esoteric review process. He ended up just moving to AWS and getting it done in minutes. By the time Google's senior product people called him to apologize, the company was already deployed on AWS and Google missed out on a huge future cloud spend.
Someone even asked, where is Sergey's founder mode? And another joked that Sergey Brin is out spending $100 million lobbying against the billionaire tax in California so he does not become a pleb. But jokes aside, it is a classic Google Cloud problem that we have talked about on the show before. You compare it to OpenAI's platform, which is streamlined and easy to use. With Google, even with tools like AI Studio, it feels bolted on without a clear connection to the rest of the ecosystem. If Google wants developers to adopt 3.7 Flash over Sol or Fable, they cannot just compete on price and context windows. They have to fix the onboarding friction.
And if developers get frustrated with closed ecosystems, they might just go open source. Our third story is the developer preview of the DeepSeek Harness. This is a new open source agent infrastructure from DeepSeek, and their whole philosophy here is that everything is a plugin.
I love the architectural approach here. The model is the soul of the agent, but the harness is what lets it actually interact with the world. DeepSeek built this on top of a kernel called Cordis. It manages models, tools, skills, memory, sandboxes, all as swappable plugins. You can literally swap out any capability via a configuration file without touching the DeepSeek Harness source code.
They also have these really cool runtime modes. There's a standard mode with a full toolset for web search and file editing, and a code mode that uses model-generated code to orchestrate multiple rounds of tool calls. There's also a minimal mode that just gives the agent a shell tool and a file editor for benchmarking. But the one that caught my eye is Creator Mode, which lets you inspect the current runtime, test plugins in memory, and combine them into entirely new modes.
It is a brilliant way to standardize agent development. We have seen so many fragmented frameworks over the last couple of years, and DeepSeek is really stepping up to provide a unified, traceable environment. They keep an append-only session log of everything the model sees, including system prompts, reasoning, and every context injection. You can inspect these records by source in their trajectory view, which makes debugging these autonomous agents so much easier.
Moving on to our fourth story, Linux users finally have something to celebrate. The Codex integration in the ChatGPT desktop app is now in preview for Linux. It supports Ubuntu, Debian, and Fedora across both x64 and ARM64 architectures.
It is about time. The app brings ChatGPT, ChatGPT Work, and Codex together in one native desktop experience. You can manage projects, work with local files, and run Codex right alongside your standard chats. But of course, because it is Linux, the Hacker News comments immediately zeroed in on display servers and input methods.
Naturally, a user named Suika posted a great breakdown of a bug with Japanese input methods on Fedora KDE using Wayland. It turns out the app was silently falling back to X11, which also caused some blurry 4K scaling issues. But they found a workaround by passing some specific Ozone platform flags to force native Wayland support, which fixed the input method editor and the scaling. Another user confirmed the exact same fix worked for Korean input on Endeavor OS.
That is the most Linux desktop comment thread ever, and I love it. But beyond the technical troubleshooting, there was a really good debate about the shift from command line interfaces to graphical interfaces for AI agents. Someone asked what the advantage of the desktop app is over just using the Codex CLI with multiple folders.
And the answers were really compelling. A user named Gareth321 pointed out that the desktop app is basically becoming an agent development environment. It supervises multiple agents, handles built-in Git work trees so agents can work on isolated copies of your repo, and combines terminal previews, pull request reviews, and an integrated browser all in one place.
Right. You can have Codex build a front-end mockup, run it in the app's integrated browser, and iterate on it visually. Plus, managing long-running background tasks like issue triage or continuous integration monitoring is just way more intuitive in a visual workspace. We are really seeing the evolution of the IDE into the ADE. Though not everyone was thrilled. One user named Pentagramma noted that since Codex was folded into the main ChatGPT app on Windows, it feels noticeably slower and uses over a gigabyte of RAM, compared to the classic app, which used less than half of that.
There were also some security concerns raised. A user named Body Culture pointed out that making these powerful agents so easy to install might trap people into running them without any isolation on their primary user accounts. We've seen recent security events where operators avoid the hassle of isolating their agents, and running them with default privileges could be a recipe for disaster if the agent goes rogue or gets compromised.
That is a very fair point. Convenience always comes with a security trade-off. Which actually transitions us perfectly to our final story today, which is an absolute mind-bender. It is a GitHub repository from the legendary security researcher Christopher Domus, also known as XORAXAXX. The project is called Spaghettifying DRAM, and it is a hardware exploit that unlocks basically everything on an AMD CPU.
Christopher Domus is famous for these deep architectural hardware hacks, like the Mobfuscator from years ago. This new work targets the bottom layers of the memory hierarchy. Basically, when your code dereferences a pointer, it goes through a massive gauntlet before it ever touches physical memory. We are talking canonical form checks, translation look-aside buffer probes, hardware page walks, privilege checks, and memory type resolution.
But Domus figured out a way to poke the DRAM controller directly and rewire the physical address translations. By scrambling the platform memory, he exposes protected regions of DRAM that are completely invisible even to the operating system kernel. We are talking about unlocking the platform security processor, system management mode, CPU microcode, and C6 DRAM. It breaks the fundamental security primitives built on those address translations.
The Hacker News crowd was absolutely eating this up. People were saying they cannot wait for the inevitable Black Hat talk on this, praising Domus for how fantastically he explains his work. But it also sparked a really interesting conversation about modern hardware security. A user named White Dawn pointed out that this must be making the Xbox and PlayStation security teams very nervous, since getting Ring Zero access on those consoles usually blows the whole system wide open.
But then others chimed in to clarify that modern consoles and even modern server CPUs actually treat DRAM as completely untrusted. For example, a user named Amar2 noted that the Xbox One encrypts all the DRAM it uses before it even leaves the main CPU die. Cloud providers do the same thing now with per virtual machine memory encryption keys, like AWS Nitro Secure Enclaves. So even if you scramble the DRAM controller and read the memory, you are just getting encrypted garbage unless you also have the keys.
Exactly. The repository notes that this was developed and tested on AMD Family 16H CPUs, which are older Jaguar architectures from around 2013. Modern Zen architectures use a completely different memory controller that is configured and locked by the firmware at boot. CPU designers have been aware of this attack vector for a while, so you would have to break the firmware locks before pulling this off on a modern chip. But as a proof of concept for how layers of abstraction can be bypassed by attacking the physical hardware underneath them, it is just a brilliant piece of engineering.
It really makes you appreciate how complex modern computers are. The diagram in the repository showing the journey of a single pointer through the CPU, the memory management unit, the caches, and the interconnect fabric is just dizzying. As one commenter put it, it feels like you need 3 PhDs just to bring up a microcontroller with DRAM these days. It is a miracle any of this stuff works at all.
It really is. And that is going to do it for today's episode of HN Pod. From wafer scale AI chips and new workhorse models to Linux desktop agents and DRAM scrambling, it has been a packed show.
Thanks for joining us for episode 487. We will be back tomorrow to break down the latest and greatest from the top of Hacker News. Until then, keep building and stay curious.